Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. On one level, it's just an open state Senate seat, a summertime special election, a race whose outcome won't affect the New Hampshire Senate's balance of power. But at another level, the July 25th election for Senate District 16 is a proxy for statewide politics in terms of money and interest from outside groups. And the candidates are talking about issues that matter to the whole state. Substance abuse, public schools, taxes, workforce development, even immigration. Today in The Exchange, the three candidates join us vying for a Senate seat that covers Manchester Wards 1, 2, and 12, and Hooksett, Bow, Candia, and Dunbarton. Let's get you into our conversation. Whether you live in this district or not, what do you think the state Senate should prioritize? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests are David Booten. He's a Republican, a former state senator who represented the district for two full terms. He also served several terms as a House lawmaker. And David Booten, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you very much for having me here today, Laura.
Also with us, Jason Dubrow. He's a libertarian, an engineer based in Dunbarton, where he's been active in town government. He first ran for the legislature in 2010. And Jason, nice to meet you.
Thank you very much for having me here.
And also with us, Kevin Cavanaugh, a Democrat, a Ward 1 alderman in Manchester. He's employed by Fairpoint Communications. He's the assistant business manager of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. And Kevin Cavanaugh, good to meet you, too. Thank you for being here.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you for having me this morning.
Well, and Kevin, I want to start with you. David Booten is the most experienced candidate in this race. He's served in the legislature. He's served in this seat in particular. He's been around local politics for a long time. What makes you a better choice? You're sort of the new guy to politics.
Yeah, I've been involved in politics for a whopping 18 months. You know, so it's what I can bring, and I've been a blue-collar worker my whole life for 32 years in my career, and I can bring that aspect. I deal with people as assistant business manager for Local 2320. Every day I'm dealing with people, the problems they have at work, whether it's personal problems at home, and that blue-collar background that I have, I think, is unique for any of the other candidates. I really want to bring that and help working families in the state.
So is political experience a plus or a minus? What do you think?
Well, I've learned in 18 months in waiting for state money to come to our schools, and we had one motion that we were going to try to go with the school budget in Manchester and hoping the state was going to give us a certain amount of money. That for a father with three kids going through the public schools is very frustrating. I think having the perspective of a working family is more important, I feel, than someone in politics.
And so, David Booten, to you next. We're in a political era where political experience can be seen as a disadvantage. We've just elected a president who's never held public office before, running in the idea, the very popular idea, that an outsider, no ties to politics, is better able to tackle problems. What do you think? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think that my perspective is I always felt that working on bills, working in committees is less important than what you do as a state senator to help constituents. It's more important what you can when you have a senior call you and say, I moved and they cut my food stamps because I'm at a different address. Or a business, small business owner who's gotten the sign-off from the local fire department but can't get the sign-off from the state agency. And these kind of stories go on and on. And so I when I talk to people, and by the way, I've just had a great time out knocking on thousands of doors, you know, meeting people in their driveways, the kitchen. One time I was, they said, hey, we're going to have lunch out on our back deck. Come on and join us. So I sat there and had a sandwich with them and chatted with them. But that's how you find out. That's how it works in New Hampshire.
So the experience helps you connect constituents with the things that they need.
Certainly, it's very critical that you know where to go to get help for the constituents. And so, yes, I have served in the legislature for 11 years. But by the way, Laura, since the age of 24, I've been in public service, working at the town level, and then also spending a number of years serving on many numbers of boards and commissions at the local level. That's what it means to be in New Hampshire, to give back to your community and give back to your state.
So how do you feel, David, about this whole era of the outsider and people wanting someone who has not been invested for a long time like you?
You know, As I said, I've knocked on thousands of doors. Just yesterday alone, I made over 300 phone calls. You know what? Not one person said that to me.
Okay.
Not one.
Well, and speaking of outsiders, Jason Dubrow, you've been active in town government in your town. But why do you think the state Senate needs a libertarian perspective? What would you bring that would be different from the Democrats or the Republicans?
Well, I think what we've seen in the past is the left and right have their ideas, and we kind of swing like a pendulum one way or another. And I think that's very destructive to our country, unfortunately. And I think as an outsider, as a libertarian, we can bring new ideas, especially as an engineer. I like to look at problems and try to come up with solutions. They may not always be the best solution, but I think we really need that discussion to bring everyone together with an outside perspective that we haven't really had for many, many years.
So looking at yourself and the Libertarian Party in general is a way to say to Democrats and Republicans, whoa, whoa, guys, let's bring the best of both worlds and come together. In the New Hampshire House, as I'm sure you know, Jason, Libertarian-leaning members were blamed in part for the House's failure to reach a budget compromise, meaning the Senate and the governor got a bigger role. Is that an example of what you're talking about?
Kind of, but there's a lot of issues that I agree with Kevin here with. There's a lot of issues I'll agree with David and the Republicans. And, you know, a lot of times I'll just be kind of on my own in the middle. And I think that's very important for the future of the country. We now have tripartisanship in New Hampshire. We're not a bipartisan state anymore. We have three parties. And I think it's very important for third parties, whether it's Libertarian, Green Party, can't think of any others right now. But I think it's very important for them to all have a seat at the table.
The phone number for you to join us, to join the conversation at the Exchanges table this morning, is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at the New Hampshire State Senate. We're talking with three candidates who want to be the next state senator from District 16. We'll cover a lot of the issues that they've been talking about. These issues have impacts for all of us in the Granite State: public education, child protection, taxes, workforce development, to name a few. Let's get you into our conversation, whether you live in this district or not. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And all of you, let's start talking about some of these issues and begin with health care. Just today, there's news that the U.S. Senate is giving up on repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. Now Senate leaders say they're just aiming to repeal and maybe replace later. And David Booten, to you first, how do you view this?
Well, look, I'm not running for a federal office. I'm running for the state Senate. So let me talk about what I did on health care in the state Senate. I voted 2 years ago. I voted for the Medicaid expansion. I think it's critically important. I believe we're servicing now something in the order of 50,000 people who are no longer going to emergency rooms. So we've dropped our uncompensated care down very much. We've lowered the tax or the cost impact to premiums for people like myself and everybody else in the state.
The hospitals have been
big
fans of
this. That's what's important. Let me also tell you that I was at the tip of the spear on the mental health crisis. That's related to health, correct? And so I got the 10 crisis beds at the New Hampshire Hospital. That was just the beginning. And now, in the new budget, they've created 60 additional crisis beds that will be spread around the state of New Hampshire. We have a lot of good things in our health care here in New Hampshire, but we also have more work to do.
So let's focus on the state, and I want to get the other gentleman in as well. But so, David, given that you favored Medicaid expansion, are you pleased to see the U.S. Senate give up on its health care bill, given that they would have cut Medicaid?
Well, I didn't support that initiative either in the House or Senate side. Again, I'm running for the state Senate, not federal office.
Understood.
And
there are big impacts here in New Hampshire of this federal health care bill.
I think that a lot of people have expressed their concern, including the governor, Governor Sununu, and including Senate leaders, that we had a deep and abiding concern about what Congress was potentially going to do in terms of cutting back Medicaid expansion and eventually eliminating it. We need to keep that. We need to keep people healthy in this state, and that's what we need to focus on.
What do you want to happen on this federal bill? And again, I appreciate what David Booten says, Kevin, that you guys are running for state Senate, but there are huge impacts of this this repeal and replace effort in Washington on the Granite State.
Right. That would be devastating if they did that, I feel. It's going to affect a lot of people in the state. They should. You can always fix things and make it better. Just to repeal that whole bill, it would affect too many people in the state of New Hampshire, people relying on this Medicaid expansion. It's the biggest thing you have. I mean, we all have health concerns, and we need quality health care. It's a safety net we should all have. 2 years ago in my family, my wife was diagnosed with cancer. If we didn't have that, it would have been devastating to us. We have to have that. And it does start at the federal level. And we have to talk to our federal delegation to make sure they don't do that. They can't put people, New Hampshire people, in harm's way when they do that. We've had that issue with what I do for work with the IBEW. And we partnered with NECA, the National Electrical Contractors Association, years ago. We saw the spiraling cost of health care, and we came together. This is business owners and union officials, and we formed the FMCP, the Family Medical Care Plan. It's high-quality, affordable health care. It's about 25 to 30% cheaper than a lot of plans that are out there, but it's working together, and it's helping people, because if we don't have contractors, business owners that are hiring people, I wouldn't have anyone to represent in people working. So we can work together with things like that. We can form partnerships where we address issues and help people at the same time.
One of the critiques that some people here in the state have had of the Affordable Care Act, Kevin, is that they blame it for raising premiums. Premiums here in New Hampshire are slated to go up by a lot. So I wonder how you get your arms around that and whether Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is partly to blame for that.
Well, like I said in the beginning with that, to repeal the whole thing is wrong. I think there's things we can look at, we can tweak, we can work to make it a better plan, and that's what we've got to look at. We can't make it, you can't have someone on these plans and then make it so affordable, so expensive that they can't afford to have it. It's counterproductive. So there are things that we can look at, and we have to tweak. It would be great, like you say, to get our arms around it, and what can we do for the residents of the state to really make it affordable, quality health care.
So, Jason, I'm guessing you have a different perspective on this. Is there a federal role or a state role at all in health care?
Well, I think it's very important that we actually get insurance costs under control. They've been spiraling up and up. They don't seem to go down. And what I, as an outsider, see is many times when the government comes in and interferes with the free market, costs go up. That may not be the only reason. But I've talked to a lot of people who had very good health care until just a few years ago, where the price really just started going up. I went back to look at how much I was paying when I first graduated college for my health insurance and look for a similar plan through my company. And the cost is up about 6 or 7 times. So we definitely have a problem here. And I think there's a lot of things that we can do as a state that might be able to solve that issue.
Such as?
And one of the things I think would be helpful is possibly allowing doctors to actually provide their own level of health insurance. There's been a number of states that have done similar plans where you pay a simple $10, $20 a month to your doctor, and you can take your regular physicals there. If you get sick, you go in, and you maybe pay a $5 copay with that. But that's one way that we can actually work to lower the cost within our state. When I go to my doctor, I've asked her many times, if I just pay cash right now, how much are you going to charge me? And it's $50. If I go and pay with insurance, it's somewhere between $120 to $150, whether it's my child or my wife or I. So we really have this big problem where going through insurance is really driving up the cost of healthcare.
So get rid of the whole insurance industry?
Well, I wouldn't say get rid of the entire insurance industry, but I think what we really need is different levels of insurance. And unfortunately, that's not in the state control, as both Kevin and Dave have stated. But if we have somebody who just wants a catastrophic care, they can get that. They want catastrophic prescription care, they can get that. If we have different levels that actually meet the needs of the people, rather than dictating, you have to have this. I have friends who, they're healthy, they're young, they were paying a reasonable amount of money. They're self-employed, but they can't afford health care anymore. So unfortunately, his wife passed away. They don't have health insurance for himself or his three children because they can't afford it.
Are you blaming the Affordable Care Act for that? Because some people would say, hey, premiums were always, you know, going up by ridiculous amounts.
I would more blame a lot of the government intervention in there. They put regulations that just become really costly, both for doctors and insurance companies, that just cause the rates to go up.
Well, lots more to talk about, guys. And we could probably do a whole hour with all of you on health care. It's complicated, but I do want to turn to some other issues, especially those that will be right in front of you as members of the state Senate. The number for our listeners to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Here's something that I hear time and time again from businesses and other employers in the state. They're really struggling to find qualified workers. And I'm going to obviously ask everybody, but Kevin, I think I'll start with you this time. What's the state's role here, if anything, to improve the quality of the workforce and just the quantity of people available?
Well, we can start with the university system. I think we've got to have appropriate levels of funding. We can't cut that. In 2011, it was cut by 45%. Our kids are coming out of college with the biggest debt in the country. We've got to do something with that. If we're going to keep people here with a family-friendly economy, we have to have the full day of kindergarten. That's going to attract and retain young families to stay in the area. We have to, again, affordable quality health care and affordable quality housing is very important. That's going to help keep people here. With what I've done over 32 years, we've had always have a workforce development. If I was still doing the same thing I was doing 32 years ago, there's not much more that's around from that. But so there's a lot of workforce development things we could do. This past budget didn't touch on that at all. We've got to help businesses. It's going to help good paying jobs to build good paying jobs. And that's what's really going to help young families stay. A good job, full day kindergarten is going to really keep young families here and attract businesses when we have that workforce development.
So from kindergarten to college, that's all part of workforce development. David Booten, a couple questions for you, too, on this. Democrats have criticized the new state budget on this score, saying businesses were seeking help with workforce development, not tax cuts, but instead they got tax cuts and very little in terms of workforce development. Now, you weren't in the legislature, but how do you feel about that critique, David?
Let me just say, I'll just take this opportunity real quick to say that I'm completely opposed to any broad-based tax. But let's talk about the business tax. I voted for the first cuts. And going into the first half of fiscal year 17, we saw a 12% increase in business tax revenue to the state. That's the kind of money that's funding the programs. And the budget went from 11.3 to 11.7 billion. That's why we have $23 million now more in the Bureau of Alcohol and Drug. That's why we've increased the amount that's going to go from the Liquor Commission to the Alcohol Treatment Fund from 1.7 to 1.3. So, but to say that this budget didn't address workforce development, I would disagree with that wholeheartedly.
Let you expand on that disagreement after a break, okay? And I apologize. We're heading into a break, but right out of it, okay. I'll let you finish up on workforce development for sure. And Jason, I'll hear from you on that. And we'll also do a little bit of a lightning round with our candidates, a couple quick yes or no questions on various issues. And of course, we'll hear from you, 1-800-892-6477.
Yeah.
time is running out to get in on the early bird portion of NHPR's Summer Car Raffle and for the chance to win $2,000 in gas cards. You'll also be entered to win a kayak, a Trek bike, and roof rack, not to mention our grand prize, $25,000 toward a shiny new car. Purchasing raffle tickets is on your to-do list, so don't put it off another day. Get your raffle tickets right now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, three candidates hoping to be the next state senator from District 16. Jason Dubrow, the Libertarian, Kevin Kavanaugh, the Democrat, and David Booten, the Republican. Let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Whether you live in this district or not, the candidates are definitely talking about issues that matter for the whole state. So we'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. The district, by the way, covers Candia, Bow, Hooksett, Dunbarton, and Manchester wards 1, 2, and 12. And David Booten, just before the break, we were talking about workforce development, a huge priority for employers here in New Hampshire. And I did want to let you finish up your point.
Well, it's a huge priority for me, but I want to just clarify one point that Mr. Kavanaugh made, that the fact that he was inaccurate. What we have done over the last 4 years is we've frozen the tuition hikes at UNH, so that makes it more affordable for our students. But let's talk about workforce development. So what we did in this budget is $7 million new dollars for community college. That money is going to kids who are getting training in skills, trade skills, electrical, carpentry, plumbing, HVAC. We also put in $2.5 million for workforce housing. What's that? Why does that relate to workforce development? It's very critical because right now our housing prices and rents are going up.
This if you can even find a rental.
So this will be about a multiple of a six. So we're looking at about $13 million new dollars that will provide affordable housing so people can actually, the young people can actually afford to stay in New Hampshire, work in New Hampshire, and play in New Hampshire. So those are very critical things about workforce development. So to suggest that they haven't done anything is not accurate. And by the way, every 2 years in the capital budget, I served on the Senate capital budget, and we funded new projects at the community colleges, like the new auto repair facility in Laconia, the new HVAC facility in Manchester Community College. So we are doing our part to help workforce development.
And recognizing, again, that you weren't in the Senate for this latest budget. So, right. You know, we're asking you about it, but we're not saying that you were there.
And I'm saying that the $7 million new dollars for community college is critical. It's very important for workforce development.
Jason, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I think one of the things is that we really need to start early. The actual education a child has really is going to drive what they do in their life. So I think it's very important that we ensure that a child has the best possible education they can have, and that will prepare them for the future. That means the education needs to work for them, whether it's a public school, a charter school, a private school. We need to make sure that regardless of their socioeconomic class, they can find those opportunities that work best for them. There are many organizations that help that. I've talked to many people who have said, you know, a small scholarship from a place like the Children's Scholarship Fund has really taken them from a path that might have taken them to jail at the end of school or even before they were done with school to actually getting to college. But on the higher education side, we really need people to look at, do they need a higher education through a college or is a trade school what they need? All too often, I've seen people who decide, I'm going to college because that's what seems to be written somewhere. They don't know what they want to do, and they come out with this debt, still potentially not knowing what they want to do or in the not even in the right industry for what they decide they want to do. So I really think people need to have a slight change to decide trade school or what am I really going to do in the future.
So when you talk about an excellent public excellent education for children starting at the very beginning, and Kevin Kavanaugh also mentioned kindergarten, it sounds like, Jason, you're a fan of sending children to whatever school they want to go to, private, charter, and that using public dollars to help them with that is okay.
Correct.
Because that's controversial, as you know.
There are a lot of times where the public schools do fail children. It's sad when that happens. But if they have an opportunity to go to another school, the Children's Scholarship Fund, I've talked to Kate Baker. She's the director there.
We've had Kate on the
show.
And
she's told me a story where a child was on a individual education plan. He was failing in the school. Their older sibling was already in jail, I believe. And they were on the same track. Kate was able to get that student a $1,000 scholarship. They went to a private school, and now the child is on their way to going to college. So that $1,000 change really helped their life. We need to make sure that that's available for our students. It's something on the order of $16,000 right now per student in public education. It's somewhere near $6,500 per student in a private education on average throughout the state. There's a big difference. There's many reasons for it. But we need to make sure education is working for the student, not just throwing money towards a building.
Well, and I'm sure you all know that's definitely been out there. We've had Kate on the show. We've talked about it. It's controversial. Some people feel like it's sending public tax dollars to private schools. Boy, it's another one of those issues we could talk for a whole hour about. But actually, Kevin wanted to jump in, and then David, go ahead.
Yeah, David said I was incorrect with something. What I wanted to bring up, in 2011, David voted to defund funding to the university system by 45%.
That was that big cut after the recession.
Correct. And as a father with a kid in college, I understand that and I see that. But we can't do that. I will never vote for 45% funding of the university system.
Well, could we talk about that, David? Because some people say the university system has never fully recovered from those cuts.
Mr. Kavanaugh, he's so far off base. We were in a recession. Yes, we had to make some tough votes. And I don't back away from any of those votes. But guess what? We've restored the funding to UNH. We've frozen tuition so that kids in New Hampshire can afford it. So he can live in the past. I want to work in the future and move forward with the future. But here's what I want to say about workforce development. And this, you know, I told you at the very beginning, what's important for me is to work with people, not just bills and committees. And this past year, I'm not even in the Senate, and I have a business in Hooksett, and there's no place in New Hampshire where they can go for small engine repair. So he's sending people to Ohio, to New York. He's paying hotel, air, and meals. I put this individual together with the Manchester Community College, and now in the fall, there's going to be a new small engine repair certificate program. That's what it means getting things done for the people in your district.
Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Gentlemen, lots of people who want to jump into our conversation, so let's go to them. And our first caller is Jim in Manchester. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, and good morning, gentlemen. This is both a statewide issue, but it's also a number one issue, I think, for everybody in District 16. Three of the towns we'll be representing, the wards in Manchester, Hooksett and Candia, were public school members in the city of Manchester. Candia and Hooksett have left the city of Manchester. Manchester still represents close to 10% of the students in the state. It's the least well-funded school system in the state of New Hampshire. Despite what we've heard here this morning about, you know, small engine repair and how that's going to sort of transform things, the reality is that we've had a downshifting of costs from the state of New Hampshire down to local taxpayers in education over the last number of years, and that has continued. So what I'd like to hear is an unequivocal commitment from these candidates, because one of them is going to end up representing me in this state, to fully fund or to properly fund public education.
Well, thank you for the call, Jim. And, you know, there has been a lot of talk about downshifting. The state used to cover a lot of pension and retirement costs for teachers. It barely does that anymore. Building aid's kind of gone bye-bye. The state used to play a big role there. So he's right. There's been a lot of downshifting. What do you think, Jason? I'll turn to you first, but obviously hear from everybody. Is it time for some upshifting of the state to the local communities?
Well, I do think we need to do some upshifting, but we also need to look at the underlying cost. As I mentioned earlier, there are other options. I know in my town, Dunbarton, we have a big issue that's facing us, that our school is too small. We need a major upgrade. So we're looking at a bond of $2-3 million. We're a very small town. That's going to be a very hard thing to handle. But if we can use something like a charter school or private education, we can push some of that cost down. Rather than spending $2 million, we can just spend $40,000 sending some students out. And it's possible students may continue to increase or it may decrease. and then we'll be left with a building that's larger than we need. But in the short term, I think we really do need to look at how do we lower the costs.
So instead of building a whole new building, maybe tuition out some of these students, as you now can under this so-called Croydon bill.
Correct.
That the governor signed. Yeah. What do you think? Downshifting, David, this has been a big issue for local communities.
Look, again, some of that downshifting occurred during the recession. Okay. You mentioned pensions. I would argue, Laura, that if it wasn't for what we did in the pension reform, some of the people that now are retiring from local law enforcement, firefighters, teachers, they may very well not have a pension. And so those reforms were critically important. And we established a timeline to make the pension fund solvent. So if you look at this year, okay, the revenues are getting better, the economy's improved. What's happened? We've added $36 million for local and bridge programs. That's critically important. When I was in the Senate, the town of Bow had three red-listed bridges. I was working with them on one. But three red bridges, listed bridges in one community. It just gives you a perspective on how serious it is. The other thing is we are helping on a law enforcement perspective with Granite Hammer.
Well, but what about schools? That's what Jim called about. He said he's getting tired of all the downshifting.
You know, Jim, I know Jim. His accent is unmistakable. I know who he is. I know what he's talking about. He's always talking about schools. But we did add $15 million for school facility improvements. We have increased the amount of money for adequate education. And we added, look, I favored full day kindergarten. That's what I supported. I was actually one of the Republicans that voted back when Governor Shaheen was in office to start voluntary kindergarten.
I remember that.
So I don't need someone from Manchester telling me what education is. And my wife is a teacher and my daughter's a teacher. So I understand education. And Mr. Kavanaugh attacking me on that issue, he's way off base.
What about Jim's comment, Kevin?
Yeah, that was Jim again. That had that call, not me, correct?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great.
Jim from Manchester called.
But your mailing material, Mr. Kavanaugh.
Oh, David, you really? This is...
We'll talk about the mailers later.
No, the last 3 months.
We're talking about education, right?
Yeah.
And he said, I'm anti-education, so I just want to set the record straight.
Well, with a teacher as a wife and a daughter...
Absolutely. I think I'm pro-education.
Well, I can just tell you, I live in the future. I have three kids, and that's what I'm fighting for.
Let's talk about the downshifting that our caller asks about.
And the minimally funding of education, if we don't invest in education or our kids, I don't understand what is more important than that. Nothing is more important than the future of our children, and that's what we've got to invest in. We should adequately fund all the education from kindergarten, full-day kindergarten, all the way through college. If we don't, that's what I stand for, and that's definitely what I will do.
What about the idea that Jason raises, that instead of, you know, sort of doing it the way we've always done it, you know, bonding new buildings or sending X amount of dollars for X amount of kids, what about trying some of these more unique approaches like the Croydon bill, you know, tuitioning kids out, two other school districts, two private schools, if a town doesn't have enough money? I know that's not really an issue in Manchester where there's, you know, lots of people, but in small towns it's kind of an issue.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's a threat to public education. I think you're going to have more funding coming out of public education with that. It's a real worry of mine. And we can't have that. We can't have, whether it's vouchers pulling away from school funding, we have to adequately fund public education. And I see a lot of these areas pulling more funding away and giving it to private or Catholic schools. And I think we've really got to keep it with the public education.
Well, and the Croydon bill says you can't do religious schools. Okay. But anyway, and boy, I can see both of you guys want to jump in. And there's so many other topics and lots of people want to jump in. So real quick,
on
David
Croydon
and Jason.
Let's just clarify on Croydon. The reason why that was important is because Croydon, small town, didn't have like Manchester or Hooksett. They didn't have middle school.
There weren't a lot
of
other options.
So they had to send the kids somewhere. It's not that they were anti-education. And the question was, were the people of Croydon going to have the right to decide where they send them? And you know what? The legislature said yes, and that's a good thing.
Go ahead, Jason.
Yep. So I think we're all supporting the schools, and I think it's very important, but I think we have a different perspective. And really what I want to focus on is the individual child, because that's what's important. It doesn't matter if we fund a building. We need to make sure every child has the education they need. And going to public schools, unfortunately, that fails many children. So I want to make sure we have the opportunities to ensure that every student can succeed and doesn't feel like they are failing because of behavioral issues or not getting taught what they really need.
Well, what about the idea, Jason, that Kevin raises that, you know, instead of just saying public schools have failed, you keep the money within the public school system and use it to make the public school system better?
That's what we've done for years and years. I don't think I've seen them getting better. But with the example I mentioned with Dunbarton, we have to build a new building. We're going to have to get a bond. If we took a few students out, we're able to send them to Bow, another school, or private school, we can save from spending that much money. So we'll have more money for the children that are actually in the public school by not spending that money.
Well, and I'm going to put off the lightning round until our next segment because we've got a lot of listeners who want to jump in with the three of you. This is great, and I really appreciate you all coming in today. Let's go to Durham, and Tim is on the line. Hi, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I have a quick question. And,
sure.
And there's a lot going on in New York with this, but, you know, should Manchester become a sanctuary city is my question.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tim, for the call. And that's come up, and I'll just go down the line. Dave Booten, you first.
Well, my Mr. Kavanaugh supports sanctuary cities in Manchester. I'm totally opposed to it. And I've heard an earful from a lot of voters over the last couple of weeks who say, you know, they believe that sanctuary cities are going to put the public safety at significant risk in the city of Manchester, and that will then spill out into the other towns in the district. I do not support sanctuary cities. I think it's the wrong thing to do, and so that's my position.
Sure. I'm glad he asked it because it has come up.
It's
and go ahead, Jason.
Well, we are a nation of laws, and we do have laws that people should follow when they come here legally. There are ways for them to come here legally. But as a libertarian, it's important that we have the open borders that allow people to come and fit the needs and the jobs that people are not taking. As per a sanctuary city, I think if somebody is not violating the law, other than, unfortunately, breaking the law coming here, they're not causing crime, they're not stealing somebody's Social Security number so they can get a job, which is tax fraud, even though they may be paying taxes. There should be a process. Unfortunately, that is a federal process that we'd have to go through, not something we can control at the state level.
So is that a yes or no on sanctuary cities?
Well, I don't think the city should be paying money towards it. But, you know, the law enforcement always have discretion in what laws they try to actually follow. So if we do want to have them here or not, we need to actually have that discussion. But we should not be putting money towards them, anyone coming here illegally. But if they're here, you know, I don't think it's cost effective necessarily to break up families, send them home, things like that.
This has been a hot political topic for you, Kevin Kavanaugh. Go ahead.
Yes, we've got to protect our communities. And if we have people here that are law-abiding citizens, I'm not looking to protect criminals. What I'm trying to do is if someone is overdosing or someone sees a crime that they're nervous to call the police because they're undocumented, we've got to have people here that are going to protect our communities and stand up for our communities. Good people that want to enjoy the American dream. Pushing them out and calling them criminals just because they're undocumented is fear-mongering, I think.
Jason, you're nodding your head when Kevin was talking.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good thing. A lot of times somebody is here illegally, they're afraid to go to the police. They may have witnessed a crime. They may have actually had a crime against them. Domestic violence could be very rampant against some people who are here illegally. And they're going to be afraid to go to the police because they may get deported or their spouse or somebody in their family may get deported. The families may get broken.
Go ahead, David.
That's not what sanctuary cities are about. Sanctuary city is about illegal immigrants who committed violent crimes. And they're in the city of Manchester, and Mr. Kavanaugh wants to leave them there instead of allowing the federal government to come in. So that's what happened out in California when that young girl was murdered by an illegal immigrant who had a violent record of a crime, and he killed her with a gun. So that's what sanctuary cities is about.
I'm thinking we need to do a whole show on this.
Criminals should be gone. That's fear mongering.
Yeah, I think Kevin and I both agree. If somebody is a criminal, they should be gone.
Absolutely.
They should not be here.
All right. We will move on from there. We're going to do a lightning round. We're going to go to our listeners. Lots of emails, too, about the opioid crisis and how you gentlemen would approach it. So all that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with the three candidates in a special election for State Senate District 16. It's a race that's attracted a lot of attention in a swing district that covers Hooksett, Bow, Candia, Dunbarton, and three wards of Manchester. Now, whether you live in this district or not, let's hear from you, because these candidates are talking about issues that affect all of us here in New Hampshire. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. The number, 1-800-892-6477. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Just a quick reminder, the candidates are Jason Dubrow, a libertarian and engineer based in Dunbarton, where he's been active in town government. Also, Kevin Kavanaugh, a Democrat, a Ward 1 alderman in Manchester. He's the assistant business manager of the International Brotherhood of Electric Workers, the IBEW. And David Booten, Republican, former state senator, former House lawmaker, who represented the district in the Senate just recently for two full terms, although not the most recent term. And gentlemen, did you want to jump in?
Three full terms.
I apologize. Before we go back to our listeners, I did want to have a little fun and do something we call the lightning round. So this is where I'm just going to ask you a couple questions in lightning round fashion. It's a way for us to get your take get your quick take on an issue, but not belabor the point. So I encourage you to respond in a very simple, short fashion. Extra points for those who answer yes or no. Then we'll move back to some more in-depth questions, hear from our listeners. I've got some great emails that I would like to share with you. So first question, if you're ready, marijuana. Neighboring states are moving toward full legalization. Should New Hampshire do the same? Yes or no? Jason Dubrow, you first.
Absolutely.
Kevin Kavanaugh.
No.
David Booten. Okay, good job. Minimum wage. All of our New England neighbors have increased their minimum wages or will do so soon. New Hampshire remains tied to the federal minimum of $7.25 an hour. Should New Hampshire raise its minimum? Yes or no? Kevin Kavanaugh.
Yes, it's embarrassing at $7.25.
Jason Dubrow.
No.
David
no.
Booten. You guys are much better than the candidates for governor and U.S. Senate. I just want to say that right up front. Right to work. No New England state has right to work legislation, but this does come up frequently in New Hampshire, as you all know. Right to work basically prevents unions from collecting dues or partial dues from non-union members to cover the costs and benefits of collective bargaining. Should New Hampshire pass right to work? Yes or no? David Booten.
No.
Jason?
Yes, but I think there's some federal laws that prevent it from being true. Sorry.
No.
No, that was Kevin Kavanaugh.
No.
Okay, so you and David Booten agree on that.
Imagine that.
That's interesting. Okay. Commuter rail. It's not on the table right now. The reason I'm asking, though, it is something that Manchester has been interested in Manchester, part of this district, connecting the Queen City with Boston by passenger rail. Lots of businesses and the Manchester Airport interested in this. Yes or no, should New Hampshire do this? Kevin Kavanaugh.
Yes.
No.
Jason, that was Jason. David?
No.
Okay. That concludes our lightning round. Excellent job, guys. Thank you very much. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Here's one from Allison and Raymond. As a citizen who lives near Allenstown, which will be affected by the Northern Pass project, what are your opinions on Northern Pass? And if elected, would you support it? So let's go to you first, David Booten, on that.
I have always supported Northern Pass, and I continue to support it. We need to have ways of expanding our electrical grid here in New Hampshire. We need to have more alternatives for electricity if we're going to keep the rates down. And so this is an excellent way of doing it. And by the way, it's environmentally clean. It's coming from Hydro-Quebec water. So I think it's a great addition to the electrical grid for the state of New Hampshire.
Well, and some people say hydro is not green or clean, but we'll set that aside for now. But Jason, how do you feel about Northern Pass?
I disagree with the Northern Pass because I do not believe it will actually lower our electric rates. Currently, New Hampshire is a net exporter of our electricity. And one of the reasons that this is the case is our neighbors. And the reason for we have high electric costs are our neighbors have high subsidies for electric rates. That causes the wholesale rate that they pay or are willing to pay to be much higher than what would be inside of New Hampshire. And because they have subsidies, their rates are a lot lower. We have the fifth highest electric rate in the country, the highest in New England. We need to actually look for ways to lower that cost. And
but
with
you don't
all
think
of our
Northern Pass is the way to do it?
Absolutely not.
because that's the selling point. Yeah, that Northern
absolutely.
Pass
I do not believe it's going to lower rates, especially if they have to bury large amounts. There's going to be such a high cost, and it's going to be passed on to the rate payers.
Kevin, how do you feel about Northern Pass?
I've spoken to manufacturing plants, and their biggest expense they are worried about is the electric rates. I support Northern Pass. There's some beautiful parts in the state where I think it has to be buried. We don't want to take some of the beautiful scenery that we have in the state and destroy that. There is, I'm not saying bury all of it. There's some overhead lines that are already in place that can be used. And I think it's going to help with the electric rates in the state, and I do support Northern Pass.
Well, thank you for the email, Allison. It's a good topic and one that we should talk about. Here's another one from Megan, who says, if you were elected, what is your plan for putting an end to the drug crisis currently in our state? And boy, Megan, that is a big, important issue that we definitely should talk about. What do you think, Kevin? I mean, this is a giant question, obviously, but what do you think New Hampshire is doing right and doing wrong right now in terms of this opioid addiction crisis? And obviously, I want to hear from everybody.
Yeah, I go around and I talk to, I've been speaking to groups and house parties for the past 3 months, and I always ask, who's been affected by this? And you always have at least half the hands go up. So it's affecting everyone in this state. What we've done, we have to supply more beds. I've spoken with different recovery groups, and we have to have, I would love to see a 90-day program where people are in-house and really treating the addiction. We have to, with education, recovery, prevention, it's not a quick answer. It's something that has taken us a long time to get into this crisis. It's going to be a lot of work getting out. We've done a lot of work in Manchester. Safe Station has helped. It's a great. I've been there when we've taken intakes, and it's an emotional thing to see people are really out there, desperate, and they want help. And it's a great place for people to go. No matter what happens, whoever, I've said this before in different forums, whoever wins a seat, we have to work together. It's not something that's a libertarian, Democrat, or Republican issue. It's affecting the people of New Hampshire, and we all have to work together to address this and help people, because it's just devastating families.
What do you think, Jason? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong?
I've seen the drug war my entire life, and I don't see us ever winning it. It comes in cycles, it goes, and comes back. It's never gone away. And I think one of the things we can look at is a country like Portugal. In 2001, they decriminalized all drugs and actually provided a way for people to do needle exchanges and get the medical treatment.
Which New Hampshire has needle exchanges now,
yep,
right?
That just we do passed. Now have yeah. that. So we need to make sure we're treating this as a medical problem, not a criminal problem. And by doing this, the Portugal has seen that the rest of the European Union has rates that are 2 to 3 times the usage rates. So I think we really need to address that and see if we want to go down the path of drug decriminalization. But we also need to make sure that the money that we are putting towards drug rehab actually is making it to those rehab stations. I've talked to a number of doctors who have stated, you know, I see some of the rehab stations, and we say we're giving them money, but a lot of times it doesn't make it to the actual rehab place. I don't know if it's a drug rehab location near Freedom, New Hampshire, but there was a big sign that says Rehabilitation Center, and there were no cars there.
So as the drug treatment infrastructure builds up, you're saying there needs to be a little bit more oversight of
things. We definitely need more oversight.
That are really happening.
When we're putting money towards the problem, we need to make sure that we're actually putting it to the root cause of the problem, not the side effects.
What do you think about Granite Hammer and the, you know, new money for law enforcement and sort of that emphasis?
As I stated, this is a medical problem, and we're putting way too much of the money as a criminal problem towards law enforcement. We really need to make sure that money is getting into the hands of the rehab centers rather than law enforcement, Narcan. Narcan is great, but it's life support for those patients. It doesn't provide them the treatment they need. It doesn't provide them the recovery they need. It's just a life support. We need to make sure that we can actually get people unaddicted and become functional members of society again.
Who should pay for that?
Well, I think as a medical problem, we need to try to make sure that we have lower costs for health insurance. And a lot of the health insurance plans do support drug addiction.
Yeah, drug treatment can be really expensive because, as Kevin mentioned, it shouldn't just be a week. It's often 90
incarcerating
days.
Incarcerating people is expensive.
Fair point.
The crime that comes up is really expensive. 26% of all arrests in the state of New Hampshire were drug-related.
Wow. What are we doing right and what are we doing wrong, David Booten?
I think we're doing
huge
a lot.
Issue.
I think we're doing a lot of things right, and we have a lot more to do. Back in the end of 2015, when this whole issue just mushroomed if you remember, all of a sudden we were having all these deaths. And I served on a commission of House and Senate members, and we passed several bills, for example, making fentanyl the same level of crime as dealing in heroin, those kinds of things. We made it possible for doctors and nurses at hospitals to actually report information about this to law enforcement without, you know, giving them immunity. But let's look at what we're doing right now. Yes, law enforcement, we're not going to put people in prison and work our way out of it that way. However, what law enforcement is doing through the Grant Hammer program is we're getting the dealers off the street. That's the whole emphasis of the program. And so there have been some very big busts in the city of Manchester where we've taken sometimes as many as 15 to 20 people off the street in one night. That's important. The other thing is the additional money now, $23 million extra that are in the budget now to help people get treatment for drug and alcohol. And thirdly, and I think this is pretty important, I worked for a year on this in the Sununu Center. And we had come up with a proposal in the commission I worked on to use half of the Sununu Center for a treatment facility for juveniles.
And just so folks who may not know, the Sununu Center is the juvenile detention center.
Yep.
It's half empty from what I understand.
It is.
So there was a proposal to turn the unused portions into drug treatment
right.
for young
people.
So
they funded $2 million to renovate it and make it into a facility, a juvenile treatment facility for drug, alcohol, mental health, eating disorder, and there will be both inpatient and outpatient. So that is critically important, and that will serve the greater, you know, say, Concord South in the state. So there is no silver bullet in this problem. We need to keep working at it. And yes, I believe, and I will always support law enforcement, contrary to my friend to my left, they have a very important role to get the drug dealers off the street. And so I will always support law enforcement in those efforts.
Well, here's the question, though, and we've done so much coverage of this on The Exchange, you know, commissions, funding, bills, increases, new structures, Granite Hammer. And yet, Kevin Kavanaugh, you know, the overdoses are still going up. June was a terrible month for drug overdoses.
I just keep wondering, what are we doing wrong? We've got to keep going. I mean, we've got to keep on attacking it. And the Granite Hammer, we do have to. I'm proud to have the Patrolman Association of Manchester supporting me, endorsing me, the New England Police Benevolent Association, the police supervisors. I'm a law enforcement advocate. They're doing a great job. You can't arrest our way out of it. There's a three-prong. We have to educate. We have to have care for people. And we have to have law enforcement. I back law enforcement. And it's I wish you had a quick answer to say, what are we doing wrong? We're doing a lot right. We have to keep on going forward. We can always redirect and see what we're doing, see what works, what doesn't work. But we're making strides. It's not enough. We still got a lot of work to do, but we've still got to keep on battling through this.
Go ahead, Jason.
My big worry is that every single time we see a major drug bust, what I feel I see in the news following that up is deadlier concoctions of drugs. We had fentanyl for a while, carfentanil. Those things keep coming up because, unfortunately, we do have a stable supply most of the time. When you take that big top dog down, it does make those little dealers that are there come back up, and they try to take the market. And I think that's what we're really seeing happen with a lot of our problems with deadly overdoses due to heroin. It's getting cut by these smaller drug dealers trying to take over the streets after the bigger ones are taken. We've never seen prohibition work in this country. Alcohol prohibition was a total failure. Right now, the drug war is a total failure, and we really need to rethink that. We need to figure out how we can solve this and end the drug war.
Go ahead, David. You want to jump in on that real quick, and then we're going to move on to another topic.
Well, I think that's a relatively naive perspective on the issue. I mean, I don't want someone who's flying my airplane taking fentanyl. I don't want someone who's driving my bus taking heroin. And I don't want someone who's taking care of my grandkids smoking marijuana. We do have to work on it. Education is a big piece of this. And we need to start education. Back in the days, back in the 60s when I grew up, remember the ads, the fried egg? This is your brain on drugs? We need to get back to that. You notice we're not doing any of that. We need to get back to that and make sure that our young kids are not getting involved in drugs.
Let's take another call, all of you. And Kevin is waiting in Madison. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to address landlord rights in this state. It seems to me that there's a an absence of legal consideration for landlords in this state. And I'm a landlord. I have one property, and I would make the assumption that most landlords in this state maybe have one, two, three bits of property. It seems that a lot of the laws that are passed are a lot of them seem to be for the protection of the renter. I will point out one law that I know about, and that is that two landlords cannot legally have a conversation about a potential renter.
I'm so sorry. I have to cut you off. I do apologize. We are nearing the end of the hour, and we really could spend 3 hours with these guests. But very quickly, all of you, to you first, Jason, do you see New Hampshire laws favoring tenants over landlords?
Well, I am a landlord myself, and I didn't actually hear that law before. But one of the things I think in New Hampshire with being a landlord is we have such high property taxes, and that is really what's driving our rents up. I'm paying nearly $7,000 for three apartments. That is passed on to my tenants. And the rates, anytime I try to fix up the place, our taxes go up.
David Booten?
Well, I've been worked very closely with New Hampshire Association of Realtors over the last several years on a variety of different pieces of legislation. This is the first time I've heard this issue come up.
Okay. What's your perspective, Kevin?
Yeah, I think we've got to help homeowners and renters. There's a balance there. You have to look out Jason, I'm sure, is a great landlord. I'm sure Kevin from Madison is a great landlord. But sometimes you need protections for the people renting. And I'm not sure what issue he's talking about with that one. But,
okay.
But there's a balance. You've got to have protections for people renting as well.
Well, and probably an issue that will come up before the legislature and the state Senate next year. One of you will be there, not really sure which one, but this has been really interesting. There's so much more that we could have talked about. I really appreciate everybody making the time to come in. And David Booten, thank you for being here. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
David Booten, again, a Republican, former state senator. Kevin Kavanaugh, good to see you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Kevin Kavanaugh, Democrat, Ward 1 Alderman in Manchester. And Jason Dubrow, it's good to meet you. Thank you.
Good meeting you too.
Jason Dubrow, Libertarian, engineer based in Dunbarton, where he's been active in town government. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.